I believe Judy succumbed to cancer because of the immense physical damage done to her. I believe she would be alive today if it weren't for that bomb. I accuse the state of murdering Judy Barry. The state eventually had to drop charges against her and Daryl Cherney because of lack of evidence, of course. But they investigated no further. They never tried to find out who tried to assassinate her and Daryl. Brothers and sisters, it's not enough to denounce this action. We must also ask why. Why do public servants behave in this manner? Because they are not serving the public. Because their job is to suppress those groups that put people before profits, to make the world safe for global investment and accumulation, for privilege and wealth, for power and hierarchy. The mandate of all security agencies is to infiltrate, undermine, disrupt, and in other ways neutralize progressive activist groups, alternative media, and anyone else who puts people before profits. There are some people on the left who just don't get it. They say, aren't you being paranoid? I mean, they recognize that the U.S. national security state agencies commit such crimes in El Salvador, Guatemala, and scores of other countries around the world. But they wouldn't do that here. There's no counterinsurgency here, no. Then tell us who planted that bomb in Judy's car. Was it the Tooth Fairy? We hear from centrists that the FBI must keep tabs on extremists on both sides, the left and the right. But people like Judy who protect the environment are not extremists. The extremists are the people who destroy the environment. The ones... the ones whom the FBI and other domestic counterinsurgency agencies are dedicated to protecting. The extremists are already in power. As for the right-wing extremists, you know, the Klan and the Nazi nuts and those guys, well, in fact, undercover agents actually assist them. They assisted the Klan and the Nazi groups that massacred those communists in Greensboro, North Carolina some years back. They supplied them with arms and with maps and how to get there to Greensboro. They assisted in building secret army groups that have committed acts of terror against reformists and other activists. They move against the right themselves only when it gets out of hand and attacks banks and public agencies. And even then, only rather lackadaisically. Soon after Judy died, I heard an obituary on Pacifica or NPR, I'm not sure which. It's getting hard to tell them apart, it's true. So this commentator, whose name escapes me, who sounded cautiously sympathetic toward Judy in that NPR or Pacifica way, he said, quote, Judy Barry was loved by some and hated by some, unquote. I said to myself, ooh, such balanced journalism, such balance. How objective, I said. That reporter's going to go far. He could spin off a few more balanced sentences like that, and he'll get mainstreamed and probably end up on NBC and all that. Judy was loved by some and hated by some. Wrong. She was loved by many and hated by those privileged few who seek to plunder our natural resources for fast profits. She was hated by those who treat human beings, animals, and the environment itself as dispensable resources for their accumulation process. I'm giving you yet another reason why we can love and respect Judy, for the enemies she made as well as the friends.
Karen Pickett, longtime Earth First activist and supporter of Leonard Peltier, explains how the FBI infiltrated and disrupted Earth First prior to the car bomb assassination attempt against Judy Barry and Daryl Cherney.
Well, as you hear people's stories, the picture that emerges is one that shows that the dark age of domestic spying and covert action against progressives has never ended. In the late 80s, the FBI spent about $3 million, conducted over 1,000 hours of wiretapping, engaged 50 FBI agents, some of whom wore body wires to get more recordings, to set up a sting operation of the perceived leaders of Earth First and to associate Earth First with explosives. This happened in Arizona, and it was called Operation Thermcon because the FBI's primary undercover agent and their hired informant tried over a period of many months to convince the Earth First activists to use thermite and dynamite to take down power lines. When they were unsuccessful at convincing them to use explosives, the informant trained one of the activists in the use of a cutting torch and an acetylene torch and drove the group of activists in his truck with FBI-purchased gasoline out to the desert to cut down with a torch a transmission tower that brought power to the Central Arizona Project. Judy Berry called this the only Earth First FBI joint action. And in fact, it was. The point is, they weren't busting a bombing conspiracy, they were creating one. And in related harassment, there have been grand juries convened in a number of different states over the last decade, calling scores of Earth First activists before secret proceedings. And there have been a lot of other incidents where we see the same tactics coming up that we've seen used against the Black Panthers, the American Indian Movement, the Puerto Rican Independence Movement, CISPACE, tactics like forged mail, fake propaganda, disinformation, and in the case of the other movements, even lethal force. The dirty tricks, COINTELPRO style, against the environmental movement really just ushered in a new era, but brought us to make even deeper connections with these other movements that we already had political connections with. And this is something that Judy Berry always maintained, that solidarity with these other movements is of utmost importance. And as we stand up to this repression, we're also in damn good company.
Judy Berry describes Bomb School, an FBI training exercise held on Louisiana Pacific land just 1 month before her car was blown up.
I thought the FBI was evil before all this stuff happened, but my cynicism has had a very hard time keeping up with reality in this case, because this one even shocked me. What we discovered in the course of the depositions is that 1 month before the bomb went off in my car on May 24, 1990, almost exactly a month to the date, the FBI conducted a bomb school, their words, in Eureka, California, up in the Redwood region. And what they did at bomb school was they blew up cars with pipe bombs and practiced responding. And the teacher of bomb school was Special Agent Frank Doyle, the very same one who took over the scene. And the students at bomb school included at least five, and we're trying to find out more, of the responding officers who worked under him picking up the debris. So when we asked Sergeant Hansen from the Oakland police, how could you say that this bomb was in the back seat, he said, well, if Frank Doyle was my teacher, I wasn't about to contradict him. So certainly he set up a line of authority with that. But then there's something else that they did. The other thing I need to say about bomb school is the place where they held this bomb school, the place where they blew up these cars was on Louisiana Pacific land. And Louisiana Pacific, of course, being one of our principal adversaries. And, we asked if Louisiana Pacific security was there, and well, yes, they would be there to secure their interests. So this alliance of LP and the FBI and this exercise of blowing up cars and practicing responding with the virtually what they did, Frank Doyle told the class at bomb school, he said that when people bomb each other, they hardly ever put the bomb inside the passenger compartment because it's allegedly so hard to break into a car. Okay. Instead, he says they strap it underneath the car or they put it in the engine. And so since one of the reasons that they say they knew that this was my bomb was because the bomb was inside the passenger compartment. And so if you think about what he's doing here, you can take your choice how to describe this. You can either be a conspiracy theorist or you can be a coincidence theorist. But one way or another, 1 month before the bombing, Frank Doyle told the people that this bomb scene, they actually created the same crime scene that they were about to respond to. They blew up three cars. We said, well, where were the bombs in the cars that they blew up? Two out of three were in the passenger compartment. What he's doing is he's created virtually the same crime scene that they're about to respond to, and he's told them that this crime scene is not consistent with the victim of a bombing. It's consistent with transporting a bomb. In addition to setting up this line of authority, Frank Doyle also prejudiced people's response. So I'm not saying that bomb school means that they had prior knowledge of the bomb. We'll have to wait and see about that one. But it certainly did those two things. It certainly prejudiced the respondents, and it set up a line of authority.
What they did to us was, well, the term for this in the FBI is COINTELPRO, Counterintelligence Program. And what that means, this is a program that was started by J. Edgar Hoover back in the bad old days, and now in the bad new days, they still do it. And COINTELPRO, that J. Edgar Hoover described, it's a way of they targeting domestic radical groups that they think are a threat to the U.S. government. So I guess that's quite a compliment to us. I guess we're a threat to Charles Hurwitz, and he's more powerful than the government, so maybe it all adds up. But anyway, what J. Edgar Hoover described COINTELPRO as a program, these are his words, to expose, misdirect, isolate, and neutralize political groups that he didn't like. And that's really what's been done to Earth First. And the methods that they used in COINTELPRO include disinformation, fake documents, infiltration, agent provocateurs, fomenting infighting within a group, getting the group to do things so that they will be discredited, and also framing and assassinating leaders. And the most famous victims of COINTELPRO, well, you probably all know that Martin Luther King was spied on in his motel room, and that, you know, of course, in the Black Panthers, there were many Panthers killed, 32 in all. Fred Hampton was a famous victim of COINTELPRO. He was murdered in his bed. Geronimo Pratt, he, in fact, was framed by the very same guy Richard held. The same guy that was in charge of our case at the FBI was in charge of Geronimo's case down in Los Angeles. And what they did, and of course, Leonard Peltier is another very well-known victim of COINTELPRO. And what they did in these cases, I actually brought you some examples to show you. They did the exact kind of thing that I'm talking about. In the Black Panthers, they didn't just frame Geronimo. Before they framed him and put him in jail, they fomented infighting within the leadership so that people in the Black Panthers thought that Geronimo was an FBI agent, so that when he was then framed, the other Panthers wouldn't testify in his behalf. And one of the ways that they fomented this infighting is that they had these like nasty cartoons. Now, the FBI doesn't make up the divisions in your group. They take real divisions and they kind of fan the flames of them. So there was another group, a black nationalist group, and the other group was called United Slaves, or US, U.S. And the leader of the United Slaves was named Karenga. So what they did is they had these cartoons, and these cartoons were sent from one faction to the other and back and forth, cartoons, death threats, and insulting letters. And each faction, thinking that the cartoons and letters were from the other faction, and they were all from the FBI, until everybody, well, actually, there were actually two Panthers killed in the fighting that resulted from this, which they considered a great success. So eventually, COINTELPRO was exposed, and it was exposed not because of anything the U.S. government did, but because in 1971, some people, we know not who, broke into the FBI office in Media, Pennsylvania, and liberated the files. And and back then, they used to be very open. They called it COINTELPRO. They said, we have an order to neutralize Huey Newton. They even had an order to neutralize Tom Hayden. They got these files, about 10,000 pages of them, and they went through them, and they exposed this just really horrible program. And it took them 4 years to get a congressional hearing. But they eventually got a congressional hearing in the Senate before Senator Church. It was called the Church Committee, and this was in 1975. And at that time, they ruled, the U.S. Senate Committee, ruled that COINTELPRO was illegal, that it violated basic constitutional rights of U.S. citizens. And as a result of this, you may have heard of the Attorney General guidelines. This is what's kind of being undermined by the counterterrorism bill. So they passed these things called the Attorney General guidelines, and they set rules for the FBI and what they could and couldn't do. And what they said they couldn't do is they cannot spy on people, they cannot harass people, they can't engage with people because of political activities. That's what they're banned from doing. They're only allowed to investigate crime. They're not allowed to investigate radical political groups or any political groups.
Now Judy Barry is an Earth First organizer. The California Redwoods are her home. Now she called for Redwood Summer, where the owl and the black bear roam. Charlie Hurwitz, he runs Maxam out of Houston. Harry Merlot runs LP from Portland Town. They're the men they call King Timber. They know how to cut you down. And workers spewed their hatred as Candy Boak laid out their scam. John Campbell called for violence. Was no secret what they planned. So I ask you now, who bombed Judy Barry? I know you're out there still. Have you seen her broken body? Or the spirit you can't kill?
Geronimo G. Jaga was recently released from prison after spending 27 years for a crime he did not commit. He was framed by FBI Special Agent Richard W. Held.
Before I left prison, Judy contacted me, and I think it's very important that we understand the connections in all of our struggles. And this is what Judy exemplified and personified in so many ways. Held and his daddy, that's the biggest criminal gang in the history of the United States, and it's called the FBI. And what Hell did, what this pig did in 1969 in Los Angeles, was create a situation between the US organization and the Black Panther Party, which resulted in three deaths, known deaths, and we know there were more. And they bragged about it. They took credit for it, and they gave each other medals for straight-up murder of beautiful young warriors who were out not to rob, not to rape, not to do nothing but feed some children and contribute to a process that had still been evolving out of slavery. They did. Hell killed them. And so we have to look at that and use that to unify us based on the understanding that we have a common enemy. We're dealing with some Nazis, the same mentality of genocide and racism and everything that goes with it. Whatever we could do, we're going to do, especially in continuing to preserve this earth and protecting it from all of these exploitative, avaricious pigs that don't care nothing about Mother Earth. And down home, I want you to know you're welcome to come down to the Atchafalaya Swamplands and understand the culture down there, understand the history down there, right in the Cypress Swamps outside of New Orleans, between where I grew up and the city of New Orleans, was the biggest slave uprising during slavery of 1811. But you don't know that, and you don't know that it could not have been done without the Chittimacha, without the Hummer, without the Cato, without the Chacahula, without the native Chapatula, the native people who came together with the runaway slave, with the guerrilla slave, to defeat the slaveocracy. And it's very important that you know that, because all of it was based on Earth first.
Jose Lopez, director of the Puerto Rican Cultural Center in Chicago, is a professor at Northeastern Illinois University and Columbia College.
Today, as you think and reflect on the courage and life, and obviously the legacy of Judy Barry, one of the headlines in one of the newspapers, the major newspaper of Puerto Rico, is that the FBI is turning over 1 million pages of COINTELPRO documents to the Puerto Rican Senate. We discover that in Puerto Rico, 155,000 people had files by the Puerto Rican police and the FBI. 155,000 adults constitutes 5% of the adult population of Puerto Rico. 1 million pages, this is only the tip of the iceberg. 1 million pages that will not tell, obviously, the role of the FBI in the assassinations of nearly a dozen Puerto Ricans. Richard Held went from Pine Ridge Reservation in 1975-76 to go to Chicago. And as a matter of fact, I was jailed for refusing to testify before a grand jury in 1977. I was called before the grand jury in 1976. And Dozens of Puerto Ricans and their allies were called before grand juries, and many of us went to prison for refusing to testify before that grand jury. And Richard Hell carried out that operation from Chicago. And from Chicago, he went to San Juan, Puerto Rico. Interestingly enough, he ends up being the head of the FBI in Puerto Rico in 1979. How can an empire like this stand before the world and say that it is fighting for democracy and human rights in Kosovo and elsewhere in the world? How is it that a man like Richard Hell continues to be, and people like him continue to be, on the payroll of the FBI, on your payroll because you pay those taxes? What we are seeing in a lot of these situations, and maybe what you will see even in the case of Judy Berry, is that ultimately what the U.S. is engaged in and has been engaging in at least the last 20, 25 years is a different vision about the world. And it's a vision about the fact that throughout the world, they are causing a great deal of problems and damages. And throughout the world, people are resisting. And what Subcomandante Marcos calls the pockets of resistance. And these pockets of resistance are basically challenging this empire all over the world. So I would hope you would keep this in mind. And I would hope you would keep in mind this idea that against the empire of the money bags is the will of the people in these pockets of resistance.
Ramona Africa is the sole adult survivor of the May 13, 1985 police massacre of 11 men, women, and children and MOVE members in Philadelphia.
On the move, long live Mama, long live Judy. First thing that I want to say is that Judy Berry was a warrior. She was a fighter. Judy realized what this system is doing to all of us. You know, ain't no shortcuts. Ain't no talking up a revolution. If we truly admire Judy Berry, if we truly believe in what she stands for, then we have to continue that work. Not just leave here today and say it was a good program. That's what the system want people to do. You know, that ain't getting it. So in the spirit of Judy Berry, on the move, long live revolution, long live all freedom fighters. On the move, and long live John Adams.
FBI is back again with COINTELPRO. Richard Held is the man they know they trust, with Lieutenant Sims his henchman. The world of boom and bust. But we'll answer with nonviolence, for seeking justice is our plan. And we'll avenge our wounded comrade as we defend the ravaged land. So I ask you now, who bombed Judy Berry?
On May 24, 1990, Earth First organizers Judy Berry and Darryl Cherney were targets of a car bomb assassination attempt in Oakland, California, as they were on their way to a Redwood summer organizing event. The bombing was preceded by an aggressive campaign of death threats and harassment aimed at stopping their nonviolent defense of Northern California's ancient Redwood Forest. Within minutes of the blast, the FBI was on the scene and had Judy and Darryl arrested for transporting explosives. Government agents immediately orchestrated a national media smear campaign, painting these nonviolent activists as terrorists. This campaign was clearly intended to discredit Earth First and to neutralize the activists' successful coalition with loggers and timber workers. No legitimate investigation of this near-deadly car bombing was ever conducted. The real bombers were never apprehended and remain at large. Nearly killed by the blast, Judy Berry was left permanently disabled, a and in constant pain. She died in March 1997 of breast cancer. Her estate, on behalf of her two young daughters, Lisa and Jessica Barry, is pursuing Barry versus USA, a federal civil rights lawsuit against the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the Oakland Police. The Redwood Justice Fund seeks to protect every activist's right to work for social justice without fear of government and corporate violence and repression. Whenever people resist corporate control of the environment with humor, direct action, and successful strategies, and everywhere people stand in solidarity across race, class, and cultural divides, Judy Barry will live on.
Ain't no place for a face to hide from God and the FBI.
Revolutionary Ecology was produced by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio. Prison Radio is a project of the Redwood Justice Fund. It was engineered by Anita Johnson and David Kaplowitz. Excerpts of Judy Barry's speeches were taken from Who Bombed Judy Barry on Alternative Tentacles Records. I'm Ruby D. Thank you for listening.
That was Revolutionary Ecology, featuring Judy Barry's speeches and the comments of those who struggled for justice with her. Alternative Radio features diverse voices such as Noam Chomsky, Ralph Nader, Angela Davis, Howard Zinn, and Winona LaDuke. To access our catalog, visit our website at www.alternativeradio.org. Again, the website is www.alternativeradio.org. Or you can call our toll-free number, which I will give you in a moment. For Visa and MasterCard orders for the complete one-hour program you just heard, Judy Barry, Revolutionary Ecology, call us toll-free 1-800-444-1977. Again, that toll-free number is 1-800-444-1977.
You can send us a check. Tapes are $13 plus $1 for postage. Transcripts are $9. Our address is AR, P.O. Box 551, Boulder, Colorado, 80306. Alternative Radio is an independent, weekly, award-winning program brought to you by David Barsamian, director and producer, general manager Joe Ritchie, and associate producer Tanya Lowendorf. I'm Noel Hanrahan. Thank you for listening.